Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Roto World Football Show. I am Matt Straub, and today we're going to be looking at lessons learned in last year's fantasy drafts and what we can carry over to this year. This is also known as mistakes we hope to not make again. I'm joined by Pat Doherty and Denny Carter. And fellas, before we get started, we have basically 3 weeks to go now until this new season kicks off. I want to know, did you guys get the most out of your summer? Because our summers start with so much hope. We have big plans. We have 10 to 20 things we're going to do, we're going to learn, we're going to accomplish. I want to hear about biggest summer triumphs and or biggest summer regrets from you guys.
My biggest summer regret was that my knee didn't hold up through softball season.
Oh.
You know, and that's the way it goes when you're almost 39 years old. It's the first injury I've ever had to deal with.
Oh,
but
no.
It has put a little bit of a damper on what I usually do in the summer, which is to play a lot of softball. I have transitioned to golf, which is a little less taxing on the old knee.
Yeah, not a sport. You don't really need ligaments for golf. So
it's not a sport. How dare you, first of all.
What was the injury, just so that drafters know, that you sustained, Denny?
Well, we're looking into it. I haven't gone to the doctor, despite my wife threatening me over and over again.
Denny was born on a farm and has never been to a doctor.
You need to go to a doctor. Here's the thing. I called the doctor. They didn't pick up. That's the maximum effort I'm willing
wow.
to put in. That's it. All right. So now I'm not seeing one. Sorry. I gave it a shot, you know, and there's nothing else you can do after that.
You place the call. That's it. I mean, that's a huge lift.
Most men won't even place the call. So.
Yeah, I did. I called. It went to an answering machine. I said, okay, well, and that's that.
So you don't leave a message in that case, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Forget that.
No, yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm not a psycho. The pain is in the back of the knee. Someone DM'd me the other day and said, I heard about your knee situation. You have a torn ACL. I don't think that's right.
Yeah.
I will say that the Twitter doctors, I believe, are wrong on that one.
Okay.
I'm hoping it gets better. Sorry to hog so much time, but yeah,
Denny, you could ask a real doctor.
I should consider one.
You know, the stunning pregnant pause after I suggested that. Denny, have you thought about asking a doctor?
Pat, what about your summer?
Yeah, Pat.
Well, I'll say one lesson I learned is to call the site Roto World. Too soon.
No, I don't.
Too soon?
It's a change.
Pauses, no, I think that was fine.
So we got a really stunning too soon reaction from you guys.
Well,
like the change back?
It is. It's a change because I made a real effort. I think all of us did to say this is NBC Sports Edge, and you know,
why did you get Edge stencil tattooed on your back? Which, by the way, NBC Sports Edge is not going away. By the way,
right? No, it's not, and it's not going away on my lower back either.
I thought it was your upper back. I've been misled. Matt, you asked in the intro, did I get the most out of the summer? And did I get the most out of the summer, did you mean that I catch as many viruses as possible for my children, including
that counts?
Is the coronavirus still novel?
It's less novel. It's less novel than it was.
It's less, but
is it novel if you catch it a second time, like I did for my kids this summer?
You catch COVID more than Kirk Cousins, which is something.
I'm catching almost as much as Jair Bolsonaro. Look it up, folks. I've caught COVID twice. And then a far worse stomach bug.
Oh, my.
Not to downplay the old coronavirus, but the stomach bug. That's to say, quite literally the worst day of my life.
You didn't get a check for that from the government.
No. And by the way, yes, I had Corona a second time. Yes, I've been boosted. Yes, you should get boosted. It was extremely mild the second time. I'll say that. So
two COVID and a stomach virus for you, a knee injury for Denny. You guys really, I mean.
I didn't have a softball season either because I love softball like Denny, but everyone on my team is Denny's age and they ran up the white flag this year. They retired.
Wow.
I'm a young and strapping 35.
I'm sorry, man.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal, actually.
Matt, how about you? How about your summer? Was it slightly less awful?
I did get COVID for the first time this summer. Injuries wise, I mean, I think I dodged it, other than kind of the typical, back stuff, hamstrings. That just happens walking to and fro the kitchen. You know what I mean? A hammy might go. You guys know that.
I mean, just sleeping, of course, it's 50-50 after the age of 32 if you wake up with your back not being thrown out or not just from sleep.
I feel that I accomplished nothing. I did play some golf like Denny. I'm really working on my game. My putting is a complete disaster.
And so, here's the thing about golf that I forgot is that nothing matters except for the short game. Like it doesn't matter how well you hit it. If you're terrible around the greens, it's going to be a miserable day out there. So I around halfway through the golf season, the summer, I decided, hey, I'm going to go instead of go to the range and hit 150 balls.
Yeah.
I'm going to go and I'm going to spend 1 hour chipping and putting. Do you know how long that is?
Did you have the discipline to do that? Because I'll say I'm going to do it and leave after like 12 minutes. I'm like,
no, man, it was an hour. I'm talking chip. I wanted to chip, you know, with wedges, with my 8-iron, a little bump and run. I tried to learn how to chip it with my 3-wood, you know, with a fairway wood, all that stuff, all that cool pro stuff.
Yeah.
I tried to get my eyes more aligned over the ball as I put it, all this. Wow. I mean, I was in on the short game. And it bought me precisely nothing. I'm still terrible around this.
I was impressed there before I heard the end result.
Yeah.
It's all right. Process, we're going to go around the room here a few times and talk lessons learned, really lessons learned last year in fantasy drafts and how they could apply to this year. So, Denny, we've each brought at least a couple. Why don't you lead us off with your first lesson that you're going to keep in mind with this year's drafts?
Yeah, so I think this happens, especially, you know, for fantasy managers who are really into it and spend months like looking at these teams and deciding how things are going to go for these teams. And you eventually put in so much time and effort that you come up with very certain ideas about how a team's season will go. And then you draft accordingly. Like if you want to be consistent and you say team X is going to be bad, then I don't want team X's running backs because they're not going to be in a position to run the ball very much.
Right.
So that is natural. Like that's a thing that happens when you put a lot of time and effort into the game. So, but here's the thing. You're not always right about how a team will do. And so if a team is in fact okay or even good when you expected them to be horrible, then you don't have any exposure to the players who will benefit, you know, from that difference. So like, for instance, you know, the running backs for Seattle, Houston, Washington, they don't interest me on the level of these are bad teams.
Some are saying Atlanta too. Some are putting Atlanta in that. Atlanta,
yes, many are saying.
I wouldn't, but some would.
Some would. And yeah, so like Tyler Algier, who I like, I really like his profile from a production standpoint, combine standpoint, everything. Arthur Smith's obsession with the run in previous seasons. But, you know, if Atlanta is really, really bad, then that's probably not going to work out for Tyler Algier. But you have to think like probabilistically, if that's a word, I believe it is, and say, what if I'm wrong? Like, what if the Texans are actually able to like maintain like some neutral games here, even if they don't win a bunch of games? I'm not saying what if the Texans win 10 games, but what if the Texans win 6 games or 7 games and they're in position to just run the hell out of the ball in those games? Like, then you're missing out big time on guys like Marlon Mack or Damian Pierce or even Rex Burkhead. I will say his name, Rex Burkhead. If you have dismissed that entire backfield, no, thank you. I don't want that backfield. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a, there's one thing, having confidence is one thing, but being overconfident is an entirely other thing.
And Denny, it's weird, like when you're talking about like assuming how a team might be, even when like you correctly guess like if a team will be good or bad, like I think everyone expected the 2021 New York Jets to be bad. You know, they had a defensive-minded head coach. They have a rookie quarterback. They had a fairly deep backfield, not like great players, but three or four backs. Like, to me, last year, it stood to reason, even though game script will be bad, game flow will be bad, the Jets will be a conservative offense. They're going to run a lot. They know their season's not really going anywhere anyway. Like, of course, they're going to pass if they're down multiple scores in the second half. But I'm like, the Jets will be a conservative offense. They're going to, like, run the ball. And then, not that I was invested in the 2021 Jets, but the 2021 Jets then were like one of the most pass-heavy teams in the league. They played at one of the fastest paces in the league. Like, this went nowhere, of course. But like, I assumed it'd be a bad offense, but I was still wrong about like the way it would be bad. And that's just also something to keep in mind. I don't even know what we're telling people. It's the lesson we're telling them. Like, just don't even try to guess. I mean, it's just, you're not going to figure it out.
It's kind of like, there's a certain amount of like, you kind of have to just pay attention to when you might be lying to yourself or telling, like, does it make sense? Some of the things you tell yourself about a team end up being right, but other times you look back and you're like, well, I was obviously lying to myself there. And I think we'll get to some of those, you know, or you just grab onto one thread of something and you're like, well, that's the story I'm telling myself about this team. You kind of have to evaluate every situation.
And it's also like, too, it's like, don't construct a narrative in your head just to like justify a decision you know you want to make. Like this year, no one's going to want to be drafting Texans running backs. So like, you don't even entertain the possibility that it might be like an offense, like a bad offense, but a team that kind of like last year keeps a lot of games close.
Right.
Like the Texans will probably keep more games close this year than they did last year. And it's probably bad to just totally write off the Texans backfield, but we want to write off the Texans backfield.
Right.
So we construct the narrative that it's not worth investing in the Titans and Texans backfield when it still might be worth investing in the Texans backfield.
And the opposite can be true. You know, you can be really bullish on a backfield because you think the team will have constantly positive game script and they'll just be in position to pound the ball. And so you're confident that, okay, like this guy, whoever it is going to be in position to, Damian Harris, for example, right? So Damian Harris was the ultimate positive game script hammer last year. You know, when the Patriots got a lead, you knew what was happening. You know, it was Damian Harris up the middle, off tackle, every single play, it seemed like. If the Patriots are bad this year, I don't foresee that happening in the same way. So I think it's just like watching yourself for overconfidence and how a team will do.
And I feel like kind of along these same lines, not that this one's breaking any ground, but like, just don't ever assume rational coaching, especially when it's like, A, either a new coaching staff or it's B, new players. Cause like last year at the Bears, I mean, Matt Nagy was no one's favorite coach even before last year, but I was kind of like, yeah, there's no way Matt Nagy like doesn't do some designed runs for Justin Fields. Right. And then he just never, ever did. And be really careful with the assumptions and like situations with new variables.
And the final thing about that point about backfields and game script and a team like the Falcons can be bad and still dedicated to running the football. Like kind of like you said with Arthur Smith.
Yeah. The one infamous example I always think of is the final Chip Kelly season in San Francisco, where like they were like one of the worst teams in the NFL like all year, but they just never abandoned the run because they just didn't have any passing game personnel. So yeah, you can't just assume just because the team's like, so the Jets did do this. They were horrible last year, so they just didn't run and they threw a lot. But you also can't assume just because the team's going to have negative game script all year that they're just never going to run. Because a lot of times, really, their only goal is like, just get me through this game. Like,
yes,
please get me through.
All right, so that's our first one from Denny. Pat, take us through your first lesson.
Well, I just want to talk about injury optimism. And Matt, this was an idea you were kind of kicking around before the show. Like last year, we just kind of like all systems go full steam ahead on guys coming off really major injuries like Saquon Barkley and Michael Thomas. And just how much like injury optimism can like really trip you up in fantasy football. Not that you should never draft a player coming off injury, of course, but like, especially when a player is injured, like in camp, like the season is 4 months long, like maximum. And so even if you're missing 2 to 4 weeks in baseball, you know, you're missing like 5 to 6% of the season or whatever. That's a slight exaggeration. Football, you miss 2 to 4 games. You're missing already like upwards of like 30% of the season. And it's like, what's the true upside here? And so like last year, Michael Thomas and Saquon Barkley were probably still worth the risk because the true upside is just through the roof. But when the upside is so high, a lot of times you're probably not honest about the downside. Like Saquon Barkley has been hurt several times. This is a very, very bad offense, one. And just basically not to put on upside only blinders. And just a lot of times if you are tie breaking, like you can't really decide. And it's like an injured guy and not an injured guy. This injury optimism will really, really get you in trouble a lot in fantasy football. And again, I wish this sounds dumb. It sounds like I'm just saying don't draft injured players. But don't draft injured players, actually. Yeah.
Well, I think you need to be cautious that you're not kind of galaxy braining yourself into drafting an injured player and saying, like, this is leverage for me. You know, like, no one else thinks this guy's going to be okay, but I do. So I'm taking him right at ADP. I'm even reaching for him a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you don't know. We don't know. And there are, you know, folks in the fantasy community who analyze injuries and better understand it than the three of us. I don't think any of us are doctors, judging by my knee conversation.
Yeah,
but
we don't know what's happened there.
We don't even call doctors.
But I think to take that leap on a player who clearly has, you know, a significant injury, who's missed time, who's missed practice time and everything. I do think that that can be another sign. I mentioned this word earlier of overconfidence how you're evaluating the situation.
And Denny, I mean, you basically just perfectly described a player this year, people are like, I'm not going to let, you know, yeah, people are letting this guy fall. Like, I don't even mind taking him a few spots ahead of ADP. J.K. Dobbins, who...
That's the guy I've been thinking of this whole time.
It's his third year in the NFL. He has 152 career touches. He just was cleared for individual drills at the beginning of last week.
Right.
Like, the team... Like, every time you ask him about J.K. Dobbins' health, John Harbaugh's like, I'm not a doctor. Like, I've never even called a doctor. I tore my ACL playing softball, and I've been in denial about it for months. Like, I don't know anything about doctors. I'm John Harbaugh. Sorry, Denny.
No, you're right. You're right, though. The Ravens don't talk about injuries anyway.
No. I've been taking J.K. Dobbins, but it does kind of like smack of – because, again, it's because you fall in love with the upside without maybe a realistic acknowledgement of how, like, truly serious the downside is.
Don't we kind of like happen to remember the guys that came back successfully from significant injuries quickly? So we're like, well, it can easily happen we're not rational about it. It's just another
Adrian
case.
Peterson
where,
became the mountain.
Didn't Jamal Charles come back? Like
he did.
Great. I mean, but how long ago was that? You know, like it's not good logic. You know,
I've never
Adrian Peterson came back after 3 years serving in Europe and then he just rushed for 2,000 yards.
I never felt smarter in my life than when I took Jamal Charles the year after he blew out his ACL.
Yeah.
And he came back strong and it was like a weak winner over and over and over again in fantasy leagues. But I think that's probably the exception to the rule. And probably I was way, way too confident about about how I was looking at Jamal Charles that year, and I tend to be more cautious in my old age.
I mean, with that said, Dobbins could be absolutely awesome this upcoming season.
Yes, I mean, you got to do it. You obviously have to do it.
The other injury, big injury takeaway for me the last couple of years is I think we hear the term high ankle sprain, and some of us tend to only hear ankle sprain and think it's not that big of a deal. But that is a true season derailing, just complete season wrecking injury is the way I now look at it.
And it's funny because teams have started to say low ankle sprain. They've started to distinguish, to say, don't worry, fans and teammates, like he has a low ankle sprain. I've been told by doctors that there is no such thing as a low ankle sprain.
Did you talk to a doctor?
Yeah, this sounds out of character.
Well, I was once able to get in touch with my doctor. So, so you're right about that, Matt. The high ankle sprain should be like a major red flag. And I remember, you know, during the season, every year you have fantasy relevant players who suffer a high ankle sprain, and you have half of fantasy Twitter saying, it'll be okay. And then half saying, oh my God, this is terrible. I tend to side with the latter. Oh my God, this is terrible.
Just a few thoughts on that. Even if you're only say 22 years old and say playing basketball at your college gym and suffer a severe high ankle sprain, I don't know anyone who's done this. This was not me. If that happens to you, properly rehab it is all I can say.
Yeah.
Otherwise it could turn into a life-changing injury.
A Michael Thomas type injury.
Yeah. Unreal. And, but you're right, Matthew. When I hear high ankle sprain now, the setback rate is just like shockingly high. NFL, it's because, again, the season is so short. Teams just will never, ever, ever take the proper, like, no matter how cautious and conservative the team is, like the Ravens are like a team that does everything by the book. It doesn't matter. Like, every team will try to bring you back basically a week too early. And it just, like, they cannot, because the season is so short. The pressure is so immense. Yeah. Now, if you have a player that's over the high ankle sprain, just like trade them.
That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm telling myself going into the season. If that happens, I am trading that player when they're about to return. Maybe. I don't know. Anyway.
No, trade them immediately. Cause there'll always be people who think they're going to I'm 8-2. I'm going to wait this out. This will be great.
Yeah. True. All right. My first one centers around what happened last year with one Ja'Marr Chase. And like, just to kind of reset, you know, all the uncertainty around him after not playing in 2020, all that, what now we know is silliness about him adjusting to the actual NFL football. I personally, and I think a bunch of people, made the mistake of letting all of that noise kind of get too loud, you know, letting those questions kind of take over. And then as a result, you move him down on your draft board to the point where you don't get him. So basically, instead of betting on what we knew was an absurd talent, I paid way too much attention to the noise and the surrounding stuff in this case. I guess for starters, like, did either of you guys fall into that same Ja'Marr Chase trap last year? And can you think of anyone who might be in a similar situation this upcoming season?
I was so far into the trap that I couldn't get out once there started to be the panic about his inability to catch a pro football compared to a college football, which has the stripes. I mean,
this really happened.
And I think he dropped a couple in the preseason where I was like, this is bad. It's bad. Yeah. Like, I'm regretting going really heavy on Ja'Marr Chase in best ball drafts. In the end, I did not regret it. I think it's natural to panic over that sort of thing, because, like, that's how our brains work. Like, we are not able to zoom out. Like, the thing that is catching our attention and like manipulating us emotionally is the thing we'll pay attention to most. Okay. It's how our brains are made. So, I tend to do that. But of course, this leads to overreaction, and overreaction is usually not good in our game.
It's weird. The Ja'Marr Chase one is a tough one, because I mean, I feel like the way to like survive, like these, like Denny said, like, you're always going to latch onto the negative these practice reports. And of course, you're always going to latch onto the positive as well. So-and-so caught, you know, 9 passes out of the backfield in Tuesday's practice. But like, this is far from foolproof. What you like really have to do with training camp reports is like separate like true trends from just like practice reports. Like, everyone all summer is going to have one or two good practices, at least one or two bad practices, at least. Like Ja'Marr Chase, it really was like one or two kind of like isolated incidents last summer. Is this a true trend? Or like every report, multiple news outlets are reporting the same thing. Multiple members of the coaching staff are saying the same thing. There's like a tendency, you know, want to dismiss everything like a coach or GM says, which of course, you don't want to take any one coach or executive statement at face value, but the trends really do a lot of times end up panning out. And like this summer, we have no idea what will happen with Isaiah Pacheco yet in the Chiefs backfield. Like, he's already a player where it's not just like one or two practices. It's like every day, every week, a different member of the Chiefs media is talking about. Andy Reid has given multiple on the record quotes. And like, that's a true trend. That's where like, it could still end up not panning out, but you're not like a sucker for buying into it, because like, it's a real like thing that's actually happening. And it's not like one guy dropping 3 passes in one team session and it going viral on Twitter. And like 2 weeks later, like, oh, that's weird. I haven't heard anything about Ja'Marr Chase dropping any passes, but it was really bad when he did that one time. So I'm scared.
as you like to say, Pat, they're weeping openly when discussing him.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like differentiating between what is an actual trend and what was something that really kind of just like popped up on Twitter for like 1 or 2 days. That's a really important distinction.
The Pacheco phenomenon reminds me of, you know, through the years during training camp and in the preseason, how important it is to make notes of when a player is trending up and when a coach is talking positively about that player, because the payoff might not be immediate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like Isaiah Pacheco might not start week one and get 15 carries. I mean, he likely won't.
I mean, he will, obviously.
I know. 33 you touches. Drafted him one. In our Apex League.
I did. 33 touches week one.
Yeah. I'm upset about your draft pick, but you know, but you can make a mental note and say, okay, maybe I should stash this guy, or maybe I should monitor him on the waiver wire, because later on that can pay off. So the payoff doesn't have to be immediate, but noting those trends is obviously important for the long run.
And the reverse was true last year for another wide receiver, Brandon Ayuk. And I'd have to double check the timing of when we started to get word that like he was in Shanahan's doghouse. But that was one where I believe that some of us were so high on the talent that we were just like, whatever, this guy's awesome. Like he flashed so much as a rookie. I'm going to draft him anyways. And you ignored the red flags that were everywhere. Now, Ayuk eventually came around late in the season, but I mean, a lot of fantasy squads were in big trouble early on who invested in Brandon Ayuk last year.
Yeah, and just fantasy managers and fantasy writers. Denny and I have the same problem. Just like, it's so difficult to know like what, because these coaches say so much of it ends up not being true. It's so difficult to know what to put stock in and what not to.
Right.
But if it's a genuine trend, the coach probably believes it, and maybe he'll be wrong. But like when you hear something, not just 1 or 2 days, 1 week, when you hear something every week, multiple weeks in a row for camp, you can. That's what happened with Brandon Ayuk last summer. Like it was every week. It's like, Shanny doesn't really seem to like this guy anymore. It's kind of weird, but he's not even allowing Brandon Ayuk to park his car at practice. like maybe pay attention to that.
Yeah. All right. We have more to come. First, we're going to take a quick break.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And just a reminder, if you don't have the NBC Sports Predictor app powered by PointsBet, go and download it now. The contests are free and easy to play, and you have a shot to win thousands by predicting what will happen in Major League Baseball on the PGA Tour and the NASCAR circuit. We also have a special contest on Tuesdays and Thursdays called Battle of the Bets, where you can agree or disagree with our experts for a shot to collect some cash. All right, we're going back around the room again. Denny, you're the leadoff hitter, so take us to your second lesson.
Yeah. Second lesson would be not taking seriously enough what coaches say about players during training camp and during the preseason. And I know we just touched on Shanahan saying, you know, doing this with Ayuk last year.
I ruined it. I'm sorry.
That's fine. I wasn't secretly fuming as you guys were talking. There are a lot of takeaways for this preseason and this training camp, including how Packers coaches and Aaron Rodgers have talked about Alan Lazard. And Alan Lazard does not profile as a wide receiver one in any sense of the word. Like nothing points to him.
Because for starters, he's a tight end.
You're right. I mean, that's one issue is the way he's operating this offense. But I do feel like it's foolish to hear Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur and others say he's the top dog and say, nah, can't be. Right. Can't be. I say no.
Right. Well, because it's not fun in this case, right? I mean, like, it's not fun to be excited about Alan Lazard because he's not like a flashy player.
He's not. But if they treat him like the wide receiver one, then you're going to want him. Like it can be that simple. And I know we tend not to want things to be that simple. We want it to be more complicated than that. We want to be able to say, I've cracked the code. I know the secrets. I know how to evaluate players. Literally, I mean, many fantasy managers will take this approach. I know how to evaluate players better than the GM, better than the coach, better than the quarterback. I know.
Right.
You don't. You know, and I think it's important to admit that to yourself, that you have to listen. Like, tracking news, which we do a lot around here, is important. Okay, like as much as I'm a spreadsheet socialist, as Evan Silva would say, I will say that you also have to watch what people are saying, what important people are saying. So, I am trying to watch myself in that regard this summer.
And you also just can't pick and choose like when you do, because I'm still having trouble with it. I don't think that Alan Lazard could possibly be the number one receiver on a football team. So like you said, I just ignore when Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur talk it up. But then when there's someone like Kenny Pickett where the Steelers are like, oh yeah, this guy's terrible. Like he's not even like really wish we hadn't drafted him. I'm like, oh yeah, obviously. And like just immediately take that at face value and buy into that. We're like, you can't like have it both ways. And they need to like kind of like these guys are not good actors. Like these coaches, like they lie a lot, but like especially in training camp. So like in the season with injuries, it's a lot different. When coaches talk about injuries, that's one thing where you can really almost never take it at face value. Yeah. And there are certain tropes. Like I think coaches like want to believe things like, yeah, this running back's gonna catch 8 or 9 passes out. So I think they want to believe that. Sometimes they when they're talking about like very specific kinds of usage, they get out over their skis. Just like in general and talking about players, they're bad actors. They can't hide who they dislike, who they like. Like Andy Reid is just like can't hide that he's like loving Isaiah Pacheco this summer. Like Kyle Shanahan could not hide that he was not loving Brandon Ayuk last summer. Like it's not all usually like some huge like smokescreen deflection game. Like they just like their tone says so much about player. And again, maybe like the specific quotes will be like, well, yeah, I mean, Kyle Shanahan said he was going to catch 14 passes this week. He only caught 3. Like he'll be wrong about that, but they do not hide well like, who they favor and who they disfavor.
I'm concerned about the way Shanahan talks about Trey Lance. I still am. Still am concerned.
Well, Shanahan's one too, where like he's like the worst actor in the world. Like, he didn't like Trey Sermon and then he didn't play. He didn't like Brandon Ayuk and then he didn't play. He didn't like Dante Pettis and then he didn't play. He talks up like Dante really Pettis. Like weird, like under the radar people. And then they do play like Kyle. And he has never, ever talked positively about Trey Lance publicly. That is still one of the strangest phenomenons.
Yeah. I mean, when a reporter said, is it weird that you didn't have like an official statement saying, you know, like we've moved on to Trey Lance, and Shanahan said, I figured I didn't need to do that, man. That I don't know, man. There's something that doesn't feel right about any of that. I'll keep that out there. I'm not saying you can't draft Trey Lance or anything, but just watch what he's saying.
You're saying it.
One other thing about on this subject of listening to what coaches say, it doesn't apply to anyone better than it does Ezekiel Elliott. Okay. Because the team obviously made a huge mistake in making him a hugely high, maybe the highest paid running back in the league at the time, I believe. Maybe still.
In the United States, in the history of this great country.
And and good for Zeke for getting that money for a running back who's not going to have a very long career like all running backs do. But you have Mike McCarthy saying, keystone part of our offense. you have Jerry Jones saying he has to be the centerpiece of the offense. You know, so no matter how much you love Tony Pollard, and I do,
right,
and every indication is Tony Pollard is better. Doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. And as long as if the team wants a guy to be the cornerstone of the offense, that guy is going to be the cornerstone unless he gets hurt. So as long as he's healthy and upright, I don't see any path for Tony Pollard to be truly like a huge difference making fantasy player.
I mean, what the team wants is more important than what we want. Is that actually what you're telling me?
Yeah, right, but and I know that sounds simple and almost like insultingly so, but man, it's just something that we tend, there's so much hubris, I think, in fantasy football sometimes. Yeah. It's never heard of it.
What's that word mean?
This look it up. This dismissiveness. Ah, Jerry Jones doesn't know what he's talking about. Jerry Jones pays the bills, guys. He literally pays Zeke. If he says Zeke gets 20 carries, guess who gets 20 carries? Not Pollard.
Right. What's funny about all this big picture is you can be guilty of not thinking about these situations enough. You can be guilty of overthinking them. You have to think about them just the right amount. You know what I mean? You have to find that sweet spot of thinking about it, looking at it, being honest with yourself, but not overthinking it.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It's that simple.
That's it. That's how you win fantasy leagues. Okay, Pat, your second one is?
Well, like this one is kind of like an annual lesson, but you have to be very nuanced with the way you evaluate players changing teams, like especially receivers. Like for a while, it was like a big time take in fantasy that all receivers changing teams are going to struggle their first year. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't matter how good they are. Like, it was a really, really like big time talking point ahead of 2020. Like DeAndre Hopkins is changing teams. He's just not going to have a good year. Like, he's just going to be bad. Every receiver changing teams stinks. And it's because a lot of times the guys who are changing teams are people like Paul Richardson to the Commanders like a few years ago, or like Corey Davis to the Jets last year, which is a little unfair because he got hurt and only played 9 games. Like a lot of times the kind of receivers who change teams are receivers who didn't get franchise tagged, are allowed to walk, and then get overpaid by a team that's like really, really hurting for receiver depth. So it became like very kind of like the sexy, just like make it a narrative that like receivers changing teams are always going to struggle. And like, so then of course you have to talk about like, well, what kind of receiver is changing teams? Is this Paul Richardson or is this DeAndre Hopkins, who is one of the best receivers in the NFL at the time? And like the same thing too. And like, so like we were talking, Matt and I were talking about like Cooper Kupp, like how did we all miss Cooper Kupp last year? And it wasn't Cooper Kupp changing teams. It was his quarterback changing teams. And I guess there's clearly we did something wrong in the evaluation there. And coming into last year, like I had this idea that Matthew Stafford like didn't really target slot receivers. And I think, Denny, that you had like proven that wrong. Like, oh, he actually like loves to target slot receivers.
I did a little research. Yeah.
And like it just like wasn't on my radar though. So I just like didn't even think about it. I had never even like considered drafting Cooper Kupp last year. And just trying to be like much more nuanced when we're like evaluating we didn't do a deep enough dive on the Cooper Kupp and Matthew Stafford situation, was because Cooper Kupp, he wasn't even drafted as like a, I think maybe he was drafted as like a low end wide receiver too last year, but just like making sure you truly understand like what kind of player is this changing teams, like what kind of quarterback is upgrading this team, and just never making like a blanket statement like that. Like, well, the receiver's changing teams, that means a bad year's coming, folks.
I think that applies to Christian Kirk this year. You know,
he's like straddles the line because he's like a classic like Paul Richardson type, like a guy who's not a true number one. The team didn't franchise tag him, but I also agree, Denny, like he's clearly like he's a useful NFL player. He's a pretty versatile NFL player, and I just like don't know what to do with him.
I'm pretty okay with his ADP, and honestly, John Shipley and other Jaguars beat writers have written nothing but like outrageously positive reviews of Christian Kirk at Jaguars camp and his work with Trevor Lawrence, his domination of targets and his usage as both an intermediate and a deep ball threat. I mean, I'm not forecasting like, you know, like a top 10 season for Christian Kirk, but I think at where he's going in drafts probably doesn't incorporate the target volume that he could just step into there in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I was responding when you said Christian Kirk because I had seen something from Bucky Brooks on NFL.com raving, you know, talking up Christian Kirk. And I just think it, the thing is with a new quarterback and wide receiver pairing, right, it definitely has some downside, but I think we err on the side of thinking about the downside and not thinking about it unlocking some upside that we hadn't seen before. So I think that Kupp is a great example of that. Kirk could be an example of that. So, I mean, like, honestly, I think all of us should really just be, you should have a, make a list of all the new pairings and like, and evaluate each one and decide what you think of it instead of just saying, well, that's bad.
What in the world do we do with Allen Robinson, who is not only changing teams, he's changing teams to the team where we said we missed last year with Cooper Kupp. He was like, he was a, being drafted as like a wide receiver one last year. To me, he's being drafted like overly optimistically this year on like the wide receiver 2-3 borderline. But like, how in the world do we even evaluate a situation?
That's a really
I'm basically saying it's
me.
Like an unsolvable riddle.
I feel like Denny has maybe more of a read on this one. Why do I think that?
Yeah, well, I mean, last year was so bad for Allen Robinson. Like every one of his peripheral stats dropped off the face of the earth.
Yeah,
I think there are reasons for that. You know, the coaching, the fact that they weren't really interested and didn't really get along, like him, he didn't get along with the coaching staff, whatever. He had COVID, all this stuff, right, that Allen Robinson had to go through. He's not exactly young, by the way, and that concerns me a little bit.
He's also a big-bodied receiver. Yeah,
a big receiver at 20, I think 29, going into his age
29.
You know, that raises a little bit of a red flag. I will say that OBJ's role in that offense when he was fully healthy, I think is a potential harbinger of good things for Allen Robinson, because OBJ just constantly saw single coverage, was able to just kind of sit down and wait for those balls as teams scrambled to cover Cooper Kupp. So I think Allen Robinson could definitely take advantage of that. And apparently the team sees him as a great red zone weapon as well. You know, touchdowns are not bad from what I hear.
Yeah, so he turns 29, as producer Adam points out, basically a week from now. I mean, this guy's coming off a season where he had, 38 catches for 410 yards, one touchdown. I mean, it was just a disaster fantasy-wise. I don't think, Pat, that we're necessarily getting, like, a discount, really, based on what happened last year.
My canned line on what happened last year, by the way, is that the Bears dared Allen Robinson to quit on the season, and he obliged them.
Like, that's accurate, I think.
And but it's also – so it's like another thing. Like, let's take this even a level deeper. Is like Sean McVay actually has had a little bit of like Kyle Shanahan in him, where he like aggressively traded for Sammy Watkins. He aggressively traded for Brandon Cooks. Like he like kind of makes these big moves where he like thinks he understands a player – and how to use them, and then kind of flops. But that kind of plays back in everything. Like when you're evaluating a new receiver situation, you have to like take stock of the, like, not all new receiver teams are created equal. And those other guys were going to a team where Jared Goff was the quarterback. There's a big difference between Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford, of course. But like there are legitimate reasons to fade Allen Robinson, but I do think that I'm probably placing too much stock in Allen Robinson's this total failed 2021. And really underestimating just how good the new situation is. And not all new teams are created equal. And these one of like the five best teams a receiver could go to.
I think his ADP will be way more reasonable and more attractive in more casual leagues, where people will say, you know, I remember that guy from last year. Yeah. No thanks. I don't care that he changed teams or anything. And you know, in sharper leagues, that you will really have to make a choice on whether you think Allen Robinson can deliver in that Rams offense.
I think that this reminded me, this Allen Robinson situation reminded me of one more lesson that wasn't on our list, which is, I guess, make a decision about a player. Like, don't go into your drafts with, I don't know, I'm not sure about this guy, so I'm just going to kind of have him floating somewhere in my rankings. Like, you flip a coin in that case, you know?
Yeah, I think I honestly, in this conversation, just decided to finally be an Allen Robinson guy. Because Matthew Stafford, too, is a guy, maybe Allen Robinson's lost a step. Matthew Stafford will target you in tight coverage. Justin Fields was not allowed to do that last year. Yeah. I mean, Andy Dalton can't do that. I think I'm becoming an Allen Robinson guy.
Suddenly.
It's been hard to be an Allen Robinson guy in best ball because, like Denny alluded to, the ADP is like out of control.
Yeah.
I think it will, as Denny also said, it'll be easier to be an Allen Robinson guy and more conventional redraft.
Yeah, and Mike Williams is another guy. In best ball leagues, man, you have to be wild for Mike Williams to take him at ADP. But like in normal, like well-adjusted leagues with people from your office or whatever.
We have families, Denny.
Right.
pay taxes.
Mike Williams, you'll see Mike Williams be like, oh, he's 2.5 rounds past where I usually see him. Okay.
Yeah.
I have a kid, Kyle Dvorak.
My second one is, I guess, kind of the flipped version of the Ja'Marr Chase one. You guys remember the Ja'Marr Chase one from earlier, right?
I remember that guy.
You guys remember it? Basically, the player that I think of here is Justin Fields, another Chicago Bear last year, because I personally, and I think others, became really focused on the athletic upside, you know, the rocket arm, the 4.44 at his pro day, that I know I personally just very selectively ignored just how horrendous his NFL environment was shaping up to be with the Bears last year. So basically, this was a case where I said, I don't care. I love the talent. Forget the situation. Forget that Andy Dalton's starting. Like, it's going to be Fields. And like, obviously, Fields had a few moments, but I mean, it was a tremendous backfire for the most part. So like, Pat Daugherty doesn't have to be with Fields, but how do I avoid this mistake again this year?
I don't know. And Fields, I think the exact same mistake is probably happening the other way this year.
Uh-huh.
Where I said, don't just assume rational coaching, but it's hard for me to think this new Bears staff is going to see how Justin Fields' season went last year and not come to the conclusion like, yeah, this guy probably needs to run more and probably needs more designed runs, especially with how little receiver talent they have, like that he's just going to have to threaten defenses more with his legs. And so we noticed, like, totally inexplicably last year, Matt Nagy just refused to do that when it was just quite clearly something that needed to be done. And so Fields is actually someone I moved up in my rankings recently, despite how bad he was as a rookie, despite how bad a supporting cast is, because I just can't see a second successive coaching staff being like, yeah, not going to run. It's not something we do around here. Not in Chicago. Not in Chicago, Illinois. It's not going to happen on the windy shore. I'm just
too much. It's too much wind to run.
Yeah, too much wind on the shores of Lake Soldier Field is basically in Lake Michigan. By the way, for those who've never been there, it's like almost like quite literally in the lake.
Have the Bears considered getting a real field? That might help.
They actually they're trying to move out of the heart of Chicago, Denny.
And they should.
No, they shouldn't. Teams they need should. To be that, in that the city center.
Stinks. That stadium stinks. God, I mean,
well, it's the worst aesthetics in the entire NFL because the original Soldier Field is a beautiful monolith, just like the old style architecture. What Americans can get done, and they put a spaceship in it.
It
looks horrendous.
It's horrific. Yeah, no, Matt, I was with you with Justin Fields. You know what got me with Fields after his, I think, second preseason game. He told reporters, the game is slow out there. And I was like, we found he is the one. Like, he is Neo. Like, I feel like Morphe is finding Neo. Oh my God. A rookie who says the game is slow. This is it. Bang. I got him. I got my guy. It doesn't matter from here. And yeah. And you just don't.
He just meant his processing speed, it turned out.
Yes. He meant anything but the actual game. Because it looked like it was way too fast for him last year. But so I think falling in love with the player over the environment is one thing. And you know, the flip side of that, I think of Amari Cooper, okay?
Uh-huh.
A guy with no target competition in Cleveland, who is in, theoretically, a terrible, terrible fantasy environment with Jacoby Brissett maybe being the starter for 6 games or more.
Mm-hmm.
What if it's not as bad as I think it is? What if the fantasy environment is a little more friendly than I think it is? What if teams focus so much on stopping the run with a good offensive line in Cleveland that Cooper gets favorable coverage? What if Deshaun Watson comes back at full force around midseason and suddenly you have a wide receiver one on your hands? Like, I try to think of those things when Cooper comes up in the draft, because because naturally I want to dismiss Mark Cooper. No, thank you. Like, I don't care. He's in that offense. I don't care. I think that's a mistake.
Well, Denny, I think what you're saying is like everything has a baseline. Like, this is the NFL. Like, even the worst NFL quarterback is going to complete NFL passes. And like, you see this happening in the Seahawks, where an underdog Tyler Lockett is literally the wide receiver 47. Like, people are drafting Tyler Lockett as if the Seattle Seahawks offense literally will not pass the ball anymore.
Right.
And like as if there's no baseline of production whatsoever. And like a guy who's been a wide receiver two his entire career is like, that's going to be halved. Like he's a wide receiver 48 right now. It just doesn't stand up to scrutiny. And like even a bad Tyler Lockett season, I feel like it's still going to be like a wide receiver three season. And just like this, like everything has a baseline. Like sure, the situation is worse. Yes, his ADP needed to drop on last year. But like Tyler Lockett should not be being drafted behind like I know Christian Watson, or like he's being drafted by like four or five rookies, one of whom is like having breathing problems and his coach doesn't like. He's being drafted by Hunter Renfrow. It just doesn't like. Yes, the situation's worse, but also yes, like there will be an NFL quarterback throwing these passes. People right. will catch at least 18 to 20 passes a game. DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are by far the two best bets to be catching those passes. And it's not as if Tyler Lockett just like falls off the face of the earth this season because Russell Wilson's gone.
That's a great example. Yeah, that is a great example of don't overrate how bad the environment is either. And it's not that you want to be reaching for Tyler Lockett necessarily, but I mean, it's gone very
extreme. Stop the slide.
All right. We're back in a second with a couple more. First, we're going to take a quick break.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Prep for your draft with the latest player rankings, projections, and more in the NBC Sports Edge Roto-World Fantasy Football Draft Guide, powered by Roto-World, the premier source for player news and fantasy information. Take advantage of our preseason special and get the draft guide for $5 when you use promo code draftguide at checkout on nbcsportsedge.com/draftguide. Guys, Pat Corain couldn't join us for this specific show, but he feels extremely strongly about this topic. So he did send along a couple lessons that he thought we could discuss. So I'm going to throw them out here and I want to hear you guys' thoughts. So number one that he mentioned was a mistake from last year, not diversifying enough on ambiguous backfields. Thoughts?
I will pop in here because I'm very guilty of, you know, getting laser focused on one guy last year. I did that with Giovanni Bernard in the Bucks backfield as a guy who I thought would take like a James White-esque role in the Brady backfield. Didn't turn out that way. Turned out that Leonard Fournette just got everything, all the carries, all the goal line touches, and all the receptions. And I knew I wanted pieces of the Bucs backfield. You know, I knew how valuable Tom Brady's backfield can be, and has been. And I just got too narrow minded about who to target in that backfield. I'm trying not to do that this year.
I mean, you see it happening like just every year we pick a favorite and just like, it's like, well, this guy isn't the guy, but it doesn't matter because he will be the guy. Nothing I can do about it. We're like, the most ambiguous backfield in the NFL is probably the Houston Texans. And we just like decided that Damian Pierce was the guy, which
right.
if you're going to pick someone, he does make the most sense. Well, there's plenty of evidence that the guy could be Marlon Mack, or that Rivers McCown is convinced the guy will be Rex Burkhead to begin the season. And yeah, just like, I guess it's fine. Like the ADP isn't like that. Like, it's not like you're like giving an arm and a leg for Damian Pierce. But yeah, it's something to remember every single year, and like just not to glom on to one guy, especially when the evidence is like evidence isn't that compelling with Damian Pierce. It's not that compelling with Tyler Allgeier. Again, the RB8 apparently in Atlanta, according to their official depth chart. Like, it could easily be Damian Williams, Tyler Allgeier. Yeah. And then, yeah, so if you're the kind of person drafting a million teams, do not, like, if you're still like in the thick of best ball season, you can't only be building Damian Pierce teams. As gross as it is, you have to also be building Marlon Mack and Drex Burkhead teams, Dennis.
Oof.
Well, and one of the backfields that Corrine mentioned was Arizona. And I think if you think back to last year, Chase Edmonds was a much more fun guy to draft, but James Conner was not that fun to draft. But look how that turned out. So when you're trying to consider your options in backfield, you know, maybe just but the more slightly boring guy.
It's not even the more boring guy. It's like when it's like uncertain backfield, like identify traits.
Right.
Like with the Cardinals backfield last year, before the season, if you were identifying traits, you probably could have identified Chase Edmonds will be the preferred pass catcher. James Conner will be the preferred short yardage guy. They both ended up catching a lot of passes, but James Conner was the short yardage back. And like another situation I think of like that this year is the Dolphins backfield, where like Chase Edmonds is really the only one to even develop an ADP. Whereas like, well, if I'm thinking about traits in the Dolphins backfield, what seems most likely to me is that Sony Michel will be the goal line back. Like, no one wants to draft
right.
Sony Michel because he's Sony Michel, but he's got like probably the best clearly defined role in that backfield to me. Like Chase Edmonds, I think, should be a pretty reliable pass catcher for the Dolphins. Also a clearly defined role, I hope. Like, I don't think Raheem Mostert's not going to catch passes. Seems like the change of pace back. But it's like, just be honest with yourself about like what the actual roles in this right. backfield are. And don't just only, because you like one player more, go all in on that player while ignoring what is probably a clearly defined role for someone else in the backfield.
I should say on Sony Michel, noted NFL evaluator Greg Cosell has said several times this offseason that he fully expects Sony Michel to be the primary back in Miami.
And fantasy football is over.
But I mean,
fantasy football had a good run.
That's a perfect example of something we don't want to happen, so therefore yes. we tune it out. And, well, I'm moving Sony Michel up on my draft board.
Yeah, right. I mean, I wrote up Chase Edmonds as a guy who has a stellar yards before contact, yards after contact, elusive rating, everything.
And yet right? he's just never good.
And then, you know, you write up that all that and you analyze it and you say, well, it could matter. But
if they were the touchdowns for crossing the 20-yard line, Chase Edmonds would have scored more of them right. than James Conner at science.
Right. And this is what the analytics won't tell you. But yeah, I mean, it could matter. It could also not matter at all.
Which okay. is, I think, the theme of our show so far today. Like, we're taking a stand, right? We're not going do this, but just remember this.
Well, I don't want to turn our audience into a bunch of nihilists, but sometimes what you do does not matter, and the only thing that matters is what teams and coaches think of.
Whatever Texans running back you draft, it just frankly it does not matter.
All right, Corrine sent along another one, which is he regrets last season chasing steam too much late in draft season. He mentioned one Laviska Shenault specifically, and I believe Terrace Marshall. Specifically, Pat Daugherty, I think you had some thoughts on this one.
Well, I mean, so Crane saying he's saying I'm a jerk for having Isaiah Pacheco and Kendrick Bourne on every team. Is that what he's saying? And it is.
Yes, he is.
It's so hard not. Yeah, I'm going to use the phrase glom onto again. Like, we want to just glom on to the fun summer narratives. And again, if you think it's a legitimate narrative, like I said, like there's no shame in taking Isaiah Pacheco right now. His ADP is still reasonable. But as Cranes, some guys get steamed beyond what is reasonable. And if Isaiah Pacheco, Denny, is like what, like the RB, like 36 or something by like the time like Labor Day rolls around, that's gonna be like, even if this trend is real, like it's just gotten too out of control. Like this ADP, he's going to have a role. That's great. But this role no longer reflects ADP reality. And that's another thing you just have to be honest with about. Yes, there might actually be something here. But is this something does not match ADP reality? And I think maybe that's kind of what Corrine is saying, but I don't know.
Well, I think getting too excited, and I'm guilty of this as anyone. You guys know this. I mean, I get over my skis about so many players,
right.
Both in the preseason and during the regular season. That's why I'm a fantasy analyst. But it is important to kind of keep yourself in check. And also, don't chase a guy. Like, if you're early on a guy like Pacheco, that's great, but you don't have to keep chasing him. Like we, you know, who was that, the running back for Jacksonville that one year? Oh, Toby Gerhart, right?
Oh, wow.
Toby Gerhart went to Jacksonville from Minnesota. He started as like a round 12 pick, right?
Zoomers will not, thankfully, will not remember this.
And yeah, no, it was a nightmare. And then, you know, got up to 10th round, then 9th, then 8th, then like the 6th round. And I remember Pat Thorman, now of Established Run, eventually tweeted, "This is insane. I've seen enough. I've seen this is too much on Toby Gerhart. Stop chasing him. He was fine in the 14th, not in the 6th. You know, that well, sort of jump matters.
And this is most dangerous when it happens like early in drafts, where the infamous example of 2020 Clyde Edwards-Helaire, where had somehow become like a consensus top 8 back. And I was still unclear now, like what that was based on. Exactly. Thankfully, like I'm wrong, like a lot. We're talking like a lot, but I just like never understood the case for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And so it's one thing if a guy's getting steamed in, say, the 10th or 11th round. Say you take Wandale Robinson in the 11th round this summer. Like, maybe that won't end up great, but it's not like a team ruiner.
Right.
Like, if a guy's ADP is being, like, into, like we're talking, like, real deal draft capital, you have to be, like, absolutely sure, like, this is not hype. This is based on something real. Mm-hmm. And, it can be difficult to know.
Well, and as I was saying to you, Pat, before we came on here, with CEH specifically, I think last year there was a little bit of, well, you know, great, the rookie year didn't go well, but they invested a first round pick in this guy. Surely now it's going to work out. You know, like this time we'll give him a mulligan on that season. But why did we?
Well, real life draft capital, unfortunately, is like very often like still something you have to pay attention to even after like one or two disappointing seasons. But yeah, I mean, you have to do. At what point is it draft capital, and what point is it like sunk cost? And it was difficult to know last year with CEH because clearly he was overvalued as a rookie, but I could see why people thought last year, like, okay, this is where he actually should be being drafted. The first and second round was crazy, but the third, fourth, fifth round, this makes a lot more sense. And so you can be forgiven for making that mistake, but yeah, it's at what point are you like basing on something logical, like, no, this guy will keep getting a chance to succeed because of his draft capital, or is it just become sunk cost?
By the way, Toby Gerhart, that first year in Jacksonville, so he had averaged 7.9 yards per carry with Minnesota in 2013,
yeah,
the year before he went to Jacksonville. I guess that's why we were so excited, right? We were. Only on 36 carries.
I know.
And then he goes to Jacksonville and had 326 rushing yards on 3.2 yards per attempt. So
yeah,
that was fun.
That was in one game, though, right?
It's in one game. One more from Mr. Corain, and what he wrote was, being light on guys I liked, but I thought were going too early all summer.
This means, like, if you want Gabriel Davis, you're just going to have to pay the tax. You're just going to have to pay the price. And if you believe in the player, which, I mean, again, this is going to contradict a lot of stuff we just said.
Right.
But if you truly believe in a player, like, a lot of times it is probably going to be someone a lot of other people believe in.
Right.
But if you believe the most, you got to be willing. You can't take, in general, you're going to be a successful drafter if you get ADP values. But if you take only everyone at ADP, you're going to be lacking an upside. And you do just have to take a stand sometime. And you just sometimes you have to go off board on the players like Gabriel Davis if you truly believe in them.
In this case, though, in Gabriel Davis's case, it's not. If Gabriel Davis were in kind of a wretched offensive environment and we're like, but this guy's such a freak, and you were then reaching for him, I think that's the mistake.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy where he's got a lot of wiggle room.
Yeah.
So again, all comes back to just be sure you fully understand the environment. And I would say we fully understand the Bills' environment is quite good.
The late, great Chris Wessling once wrote very convincingly about getting Percy Harvin no matter what. And I remember that column because it fully convinced me, it fully radicalized me into getting Percy Harvin no matter what. It was an amazing column. It wasn't analytics heavy, it wasn't numbers heavy, but it was just, if you trust yourself,
right?
If you believe in a player and his environment and his situation and his role in the offense and everything, then go after him. Like, don't mess around. You know, don't mess around and find out. You know, yeah. if you really like Gabe Davis and you say, well, I could pick him now, or I can I pick again in four picks. And my opponents look like they're okay on receivers, right. So they probably won't take a receiver. Let me see. Let me mess around and find out. And then he gets taken. You want to punch yourself in the face, okay? I almost did this during the Apex draft with Pat and other guys.
Right.
You know, so it just don't do that. Just go get them.
Don't worry about what the draft room thinks, which even for people like Danny, I mean, no one wants to look stupid.
Right.
But like,
that's right.
The only thing worse than looking stupid is being like, well, why did I not take? Because you always think like, well, yeah, this is like too early. Like no one else, like they're just, people will laugh. And then the guy goes two picks later because everyone's thinking that. And I know right. He's awesome.
That's right. And at the end of the season, no one cares about ADP. No one.
Right. And I'm thinking about, this makes me think of my home draft last year with the aforementioned Jamar Chase, who's come up a lot today. But I remember when I didn't take Chase, I had a voice in my head that was like, you really should take Chase here. Like that you're wrong. Like you're blowing it, you know, but I couldn't, I was too scared to. And so therefore I didn't. And he went like two picks later and we all know the rest.
But you upheld the norms and institutions of not taking Jamar Chase and looking dumb. So that's fine.
Right. The filibuster just remains intact.
I'm still losing sleep over it though. That's the problem.
Sounds like you should talk to someone. This time, leave a message when you call your doctor.
I go to bed at night, and my eyes just Jamar Chase.
You're like Matthew McConaughey's character, where he says, "I don't sleep at night. I only think of Jamar Chase."
I just wander my house, pacing back and forth, watching highlights. No, it's fine. I'm fine. All right. Well, we got through a bunch there, guys. I think before we depart, is there anything you'd like to promote that you have written, will soon be writing, or once wrote in the past?
Just the Roto World Draft Guide. Yeah. Just the Roto World Draft Guide. NBCSportsEdge.com/draft guide.
I wrote a recent piece on four splits that you should know for 2022 fantasy leagues. It's on NBCSportsEdge.com.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for us. Don't forget to subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you listen. Take a moment to rate and review us as well. Want to say thanks to everyone for listening and watching with us today. And Denny, Pat, thanks to both of you guys. Talk to you soon. Good luck in your drafts everywhere, everyone.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.